We've begun a study in the book of Hebrews, and this morning we noticed that Paul wrote to the Hebrews and informed them that God in times past had spoken to them by the prophets, different periods of time and in different ways. God spoke to Israel by revealing himself through visions, dreams, direct revelation, and the Bible tells us that these Hebrews to whom Paul writes were people who had converted to Christianity. They had believed that Jesus was the anointed one who was to come. And they had identified themselves as Christians by receiving baptism and by obviously gathering in New Testament capacity, that is, to worship God. Now, as time progressed, because of their immaturity, because they were ignorant about some of the great truths of Christianity concerning the nature of the church, the nature of worship, they began to turn loose of their commitment to Christianity and turn back and give all of their time and energy to the ceremonies and to the special days, to the special times and seasons, to the observance of meat, eating meat or not eating meat, and drift farther and farther away from their Christian commitment. So Paul from Rome writes to Hebrews, that is, Jewish people. And I think it is this church at Jerusalem. And he intends to encourage them not to let the things that they've been able to accomplish as a Christian church slip so that they lose the things that they have wrought by faith and that they become without effect in the work and service of God. So we must look upon this letter as a letter of exhortation, not so much a letter of fault finding, it is not that, not as a letter of condemnation, but a letter exhorting them to forsake all of the vestiges of Judaism and give themselves completely and totally to worshiping God in the New Testament or New Covenant form. Here we see Paul telling them in his letter that Jesus has brought a more complete revelation of God. When he came, he brought and in himself gave a revelation of the nature and character of God, not only to the Hebrews, but to the entire world. Paul argues in these verses we're going to study this afternoon that Jesus is the Son, that he is the heir, and because he is a son, because he is an heir, then he has more complete information to give than the angels were able to give. In the Jewish economy, angels figured very prominently. And anything that was said to have been done by angels was immediately considered to have been done in the very best fashion and in the very best form. So the first thing that Paul does as he shows them how the New Testament church and Christianity is better than the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and Judaistic ceremonies and laws, he wants to show them that Jesus is a better source of information than the angels, whom they believe to be the powerful mediators between God and man, powerful givers and bringers of information. In verse 4, Paul writes, being made so much better than the angels. And he refers, of course, directly to Jesus Christ. This word better means more powerful, stronger. The idea is not of goodness, but of power and superiority or worth. And he means that Jesus Christ has brought a revelation that is superior. He has brought a revelation that is worth more than the revelation that was given to the Israelites by angels. Now notice why. As he hath by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. The person who is to receive the inheritance is to receive the inheritance because of his name. And Jesus has a better name, a more excellent name than angels. Here, the word excellent means more distinguished. Jesus is superior to angels because he is the Son of God. He received his power and his name from God. We can say that he is the Son of the God. Now, there is one Son, and therefore there is one heir. So this heir, this one single sole heir of all that was created and brought into being by the Son, Jesus Christ, then it is Jesus Christ because he is the only begotten Son of God. The conclusion is that since this is true, then the information that he furnishes is more complete. It doesn't mean that all that the Jews had under the old covenant was untrue or inferior knowledge. It just means that the revelation was incomplete. It was inferior in that you looked at the shadow and not at the real thing. Jesus is the heir. He understands and he knows, and therefore he can give more information about the Father. And as Paul shows the superiority of Jesus over the angels, he states that there are some things that the Father never said to angels, and there are some things that he never said about angels. For instance, in verse 5, he said, "For unto which of the angels said he at any time, Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee?" The answer is, Jesus, or rather God, never said that to any angel. But he did say it to his Son, Jesus Christ. He never said to any of the angels, "I am your Father." And again, "I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son." When did God ever say to an angel, "Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee"? When did God ever say to an angel, "I will be to you a father, and you will be to me a son"? The answer, of course, is never. But he did say all of these things to Jesus. He never asked them to attend their own birth. Notice in verse 6, "And again, when he bringeth in the first begotten into the world, he saith, And let all the angels of God worship him." God never said to the angels, "Worship an angel," when an angel was brought into being. But he did say that of Jesus Christ. Now this statement is taken from Psalm 97 and 7. And in our version of the Bible, it speaks of letting all the gods worship him. But Paul quotes from the Septuagint version of the Bible, which is the Old Testament in Greek. And in the Septuagint version, it is, "Let all the angels worship him." So the argument that Paul makes is, angels heralded the coming of Jesus Christ, and they worshiped Jesus Christ when he was born. But angels never heralded the coming into existence of another angel. And God has never asked some angels to worship other angels. Therefore, Jesus is superior to all angels. In verse 7, he then states that angels are literally servants of God, and as such are inferior in their character to Jesus Christ. In verse 7, and of the angels he saith, who maketh his angels spirits. That is, God said of angels, I make angels my servants, and they are like the wind, and his ministers a flame of fire. That is, angels are his ministers. It doesn't mean that ministers of the gospel are flames of fire. It means that his angels, who are his servants and who minister to things that he directs them to minister to, they are like flames of fire. This obviously has reference to lightning, just as the spirit in the first part of the verse has reference to the wind or the movement of the air. And I think that Paul is saying that God has stated that angels serve him like the wind serve him and his purposes, and that angels serve him like lightning serves him and serves his purpose, and therefore they're created to be the common everyday servants and ministers of God to men and to the earth. And therefore they are inferior to Jesus Christ, for Christ came to seek and to save that which is lost. Things that God has said to his Son are things that he has never said about angels. For instance, verse 8, but unto the Son he saith, not to angels, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of thy kingdom. Again, Paul wants the readers to understand that he has never said to an angel, thy throne, and he certainly never referred to an angel as deity, but he does to his own Son, calls his own Son God. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. He never has addressed that statement and that sentiment to an angel. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of thy kingdom. And angels do not have kingdoms. They do not have scepters that make them powerful rulers of kingdoms. And yet Jesus shall rule the kingdom of his father David, and God will give him a scepter, which is his authority to reign. Notice verse 9. Thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness, now notice, above thy fellows. There are three archangels, but God has never said to an angel, I have anointed you above all of the other angels. And this then, of course, refers to Jesus Christ. God appointed him above all the other kings. And that's what this above thy fellows has reference to. I have appointed thee, or anointed thee, with the oil of gladness above all the other kings that live upon this earth. And this is taken from Isaiah 61 and 1. He also recognizes that Jesus is the creator, and he has never recognized angels as the creating force. In verse 10, and thou, Lord, in the beginning hast laid the foundation of the earth. God has never said that of angelic beings, but he has said it of Jesus Christ. And the heavens are the works of thine hands. He has never said that of angels, but he has said it of Jesus. They shall perish, that is, the works of your hands shall perish, but thou remainest. He's speaking of the created world and universe. They all shall wax old as doth a garment, and as a vesture shalt thou fold them up, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail. just simple statements concerning the fact that God created all things through Christ, John 1, and that all things were created by Him. The earth is going to wax old. It has been touched by sin, and it ages. It's wearing out. Like all things are that have been touched by sin, they then become subject to the aging process. That's why man as a creature ages. That's why animals as creatures age. That's why there's death, even in the botanical families, because there is sin in the world. And everything that's touched by sin ages and then dies and decays. And God is saying that in Jesus Christ, the worlds were created. The world will wax old. It will give in and yield to the aging process, but Jesus will never age. His eye will not dim, nor will his hair gray, and his power will always remain unabated and undiminished. But the earth will be folded up, and a new heaven and a new earth will be brought into being. But he has never said of angels, "You have created the earth, and you are eternal," in the same way that Christ is eternal. Paul's final argument about angels being inferior to God's Son is then given in verses 13 and 14. In verse 13, he states that he never has enthroned an angel. But to which of the angels said he at any time, "Sit on my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool"? God never said that to an angel. And yet we understand in verse 3 of chapter 1 that after Jesus had purged through himself our sins, he then sat down on the right hand of the Majesty on high. He has, that is, God, has invited Jesus to sit on his right hand. And he will eventually bring all of the world's system into harmony with Christ, and it will be a procedure that is of such a character and nature as just pulling up a footstool. That's all that it will require of God's power to subdue the kingdoms of this world and bring them in submission to Jesus Christ and make all of the enemies of Christ simply sit at his feet. In verse 14 then, he mentions that angels are to continue their ministry. They are to continue their work. And their continuing work involves people who have been saved by the grace of God. It involves those who are heirs of salvation. Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? If the Hebrews were to ask, if Jesus then is superior to all angels, and angels are ministering spirits, then to whom do they minister? What are they doing now if they no longer bring us messages of revelation? If angels no longer bring us information about God, because Christ has already brought us a full revelation of God in himself, what do they do? Paul answers that question by saying, they serve you. Are not all angels spirits who are servants to God, whom he sends on his errands for the benefit of those who are saved? God still uses angelic power to work his will in this world, and I believe to protect his children in this world, to guard them against harm, evil, to sustain them in some way that I'm not directly aware of, and yet I suppose that we would be like one of the warriors of the Old Testament who believed himself to be fighting alone and standing alone until God gave him eyes to see. And then he saw there were legions of angels who were gathered about the army of Israel and God to battle with them in their fight against evil. I rather suspect if we could see with our spirits, we would see gathered here even this afternoon angels who are ready to assist us in our work and in our service to God. You will never talk to one. You will never see one. Yet that does not mean they do not exist. They are not only God's servants, but God sends them to be our servants. And angels really do attend today to his people. Our musicians will come, and we'll have a verse of invitation hymn. If you're here this afternoon and you've never trusted in Christ, he's certainly superior to every angel that's ever lived or ever been, then trust him. If you're here this afternoon and you need to come for baptism or to move your letter and work with us, we invite you to do that while we stand and while we sing.